a lot of these things come from when we're impressionable, which is as young children and things like that. And when they become unaddressed, they build and they manifest mm-hmm. in different ways, because you think that it's all good. You think you're grown now and you're past it, but that stuff stays with you if you never address it. And as many of us never do, we never seek therapy, we never seek coaching, we never seek counseling.
Hey, it's your imaginary best friend, Finch. And I know at times life can seem hard and you can feel stuck with no valuable answers and nowhere to go. Listen, I have a host of secrets and recipes that will not only help you enhance your lifestyle, career, relationships, and finances, but also help get your ass off the fence. And just because you're not where you want to be doesn't mean you're not where you're supposed to be. So let's go do the work. Your favorite podcast, Off the Fence with Finch, starts now. My guest tonight, at the age of 17, faced 7 years in prison. And now he's on a mission to empower others to increase their self-value, improve their perception of their own worth, decrease the mental blocks, and design their lives through a mindset shift from scarcity to abundance. And he's here, and we're getting one-on-one with him right now. You guys, please welcome to Off the Fence, Mr. Javon Wooden. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, King. How are you, Finch? Pleasure being on the show. I appreciate you having me, bro.
Man, it's a pleasure to have you here. I thought your story was very interesting. You talk to people a lot about overcoming self-doubt. And I'm pretty sure, because most times we're looking at ourselves as, you know, people always ask the question, how did you get to this point? How did you do that? And it's always filled, I believe our lives are always filled with chapters that help us move to where we need to be in order for us to be able to assist other people in getting off the fence or getting off the boat and not sinking in the sand and becoming the true people that they were meant to be. So I have to ask this question, because at 17, you face 7 years in prison. Now, we don't have to get into your crime, but I
we can get into it all, bro. I'm all good.
Okay. So there we have it. We can get into it all. And because oftentimes people don't want to talk about their past. They feel like it's their past and they want to leave it there. I respect it. But when we talk about your life as a man, and I'm going to assume if you're facing 7 years, you committed a crime that warranted a jail sentence of some sort. So can we delve into that and talk about that a little bit, about what happened in your life at that time period and what caused you to be facing such a harsh jail time?
Yeah, for sure. I'm a firm believer that vulnerability is strength. So that's why I love to be transparent about my past, about everything that's going on with me. I think especially as Black men, we have to have these conversations. It's the only way we're going to get past all the trauma, only way we're going to get past all the adversity and all that stuff. And only way we're going to love ourselves and one another. So what happened was, at 17, I had an assault and robbery charge. Now, whether it was as serious as the years made it sound to be or not, I don't know. Like, all I just know is I decided to take matters into my own hands. I was tired of being poor, tired of being broke, tired of having two pairs of shoes, two pair of jeans for the school year, tired of having five shirts to rotate through. And I've always worked as a kid since 14, but it just wasn't enough. Like, my family was still in the hood. We still was in dilapidated housing where I didn't even want to bring my friends, and I was tired of it. So I was like, I got to do something. I have to do something. And prior to getting arrested, I had just gotten into the whole robbing thing. And I used to, my targets was drug dealers. And I was like, okay, I rationalized drug dealers because I'm like, oh, they in the game. They not even, I can't even see them as people. Like, they just are targets. They targets that I should get. So I was rationalizing by that, because I found out later I wasn't even about that. I really was a compassionate kid. I really was a loving kid, but I let the environment dictate who I was versus my efforts. And I was always a smart individual. I did well in school and all of that stuff. But there was a breaking point for me. But when I seen my sisters just struggling, right? They were younger than me. Then my older sister was out of the house by then. And I just had all these things, this anger pent up inside. My mom was always having to work. I rarely seen her, right? When we came home, we had to call her and ask her, like, hey, Mom, what should we grab to eat? Or stuff like that when I was younger. She wasn't there. So I got tired of it. And it caught up to me. So I got caught up in February of 2003, I think it was. I got arrested. And I remember sitting in that jail cell, man. And I didn't care, to be honest. To be quite honest, I didn't. When I got locked up, I didn't even care. It did not hit me that this was real until my mom and my older sister came to visit me. Like later on, like after I was in there for a few weeks, I had went to the floors and everything. Hopefully no one's experienced this, but you're in a holding cell for at least like a few days. And then they move you to the floors, right? Strip you of your clothes, give you, you're literally a prisoner at that point. And when they visited me and I had to look them in their eyes and see the pain that I had caused, like the people I actually cared about, because quite frankly, I didn't value myself at that time. Like, I was just like, hey, I don't really care what happens to me as long as they can eat. And when they no longer cared about eating because they cared more so about visiting me and making sure I was okay, now I had a problem. Right. Oh. Now it hit me. Now, when I went to the floors after that visit and after I had to talk to them and they telling me that it's okay, when I seen the tears well in their eyes, now I had to get a relationship with God. Because I would pray. I grew up in a Muslim household, and we prayed five times a day, Ramadan, fasted, all that stuff, but it didn't mean anything to me. It was empty. But this was the first time that I prayed, and I actually meant the words I said to God. I actually understood what I was talking to him about when I asked him to give me another chance. And I'm going to tell you, bro, like that, 2 weeks later, the prosecutors dropped the case because the victims had never showed. That was the only reason why I got out, because the victims had never showed. And they said, OK, we held you enough time. Now, we've seen, and this was New York State, and we know how they did. Mm-hmm. We've seen Khalid Brower. We've seen these different things occur in New York State jail cells and penitentiaries and stuff. So I always say that God was there with me for sure. That was God's way of telling me, like, listen, this is not your path. You ain't about that life. So get it together, young man, because you're destined to do more. And that's where it all started.
Okay. So when people hear that, they may say, Javon, that's an excuse because you had other options. What would you say to that?
I would say, you know what? They're probably right. But when you're in it, you don't see other options. Mm-hmm. And that's why I became a coach, because when someone's so into the fight, when they're into the adversity, when they're into the pain, all you feel is that pain. All is that opponent, right? And you're close. And it's just like any other coach. If you watch boxing, they have corner men and all that stuff. Tell them what's happening because they can't see it because they're right there in the fight. So I didn't have that. I didn't have someone telling me, you need to do something else. All I knew was I had me, myself, and I. And that's how I looked at it. So yeah, it sounds great. It sounds wonderful. When you're someone who's struggling, as a lot of people I'm sure who are listening understand, you don't feel that way. And it took me a long time to get to the point where I was vulnerable enough. That's what it takes. It takes vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Where I was vulnerable enough to say, I need help. That was years later. I got my relationship with God. I asked him for help and he gave it to me. But it was years later until I could ask a human for help. And that wasn't until 2017, really, after my first deployment to Afghanistan when I came back.
Okay. So what would you say to in this aspect, you're saying of the many years that transpired between the time your crime was committed and you was facing this time till you was able to ask a human for help? Why would you think that time period was so vast for you?
It was so vast because as a young Black man, when you hear a lot about what a young Black man is supposed to be. And especially when you don't have that father who's teaching you what it means to be a man in general, you're learning these things as you go, right? It's there's no manual that says, hey, a man needs to do this. And this is what you do if you come from the hood. This is what you do if you come from adverse situations to make it and to get some money, to get a good job. There's no manual that says that. And even if there was, it might not work for you because your path is different. And I had to understand that. So it took me a while to understand my value. Because if you can't see and you don't love yourself, if you don't have value and a perception, a positive self-perception, all you focus on is the negatives. And that's what I was focused on. I was focused on how things weren't going my way. And when you're doing that, you have confirmation bias. So no matter how, if something good happens for a while, that one bad thing that takes place completely derails you. And now you're back in a depressed state. Now you're back wondering like why and all these other things. And that's what I was doing. It took me a while to figure that out. It took me a while to see. You don't have to wait for opportunities. You can create opportunities. People don't have to give you something. When people tell you, you look like you should be on the street corner, you don't look like you'd be doing this, that doesn't mean anything to you, right? Those opinions don't matter, because if you have a positive opinion of what you're capable of, then we can work. Then we can start doing things. But I didn't have that at the time. And that's why it took me a while. It took me a while to get to that point.
And you were 17 at that time, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you look at life now versus then, and because I heard you talk about not having a father and the manual not being there. And I think that's right. A lot of times people are on the fence when it comes to the choices. And we hear this all the time, especially in this day and age with social media, where you have people, they say it's shift blaming. They're blaming life and circumstances and a host of other things on everything except for the choices that they chose to make. Would you say right. You fall in that category back then versus now?
I would say this, and that's a great question, by the way, Finch. I would say that when people say that's a privileged perspective.
Because
if you have the privilege of the outside looking in, it's easy to say that. But when you're going through it, you feel hopeless, you feel helpless. It's not that easy. Right. If you tell a single mom who's struggling to go to school and pay for ends meet that she's shift blaming, she might, because you're not in her shoes. So you don't really understand. So I would never say that someone who's going through the struggle is blaming other things. I would never say that. I would say that when you're going through it, it's really important to find your why. What drives you to be better? I would say it's,
come on now.
Yes, sir. I would say it's really important to find reasons to change your circumstances instead of excuses to stay the same. And that's the differentiation, right? That's the important factor. And that's why mindset plays so much into this.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that about finding your why, because I tell people that all the time. Mm-hmm. Down to everything you do in life, if you can locate the why, if you're afraid, and that's part of the reason why we do this podcast, because we don't want people to be on the fence about anything in their life, whether that be careers, relationship, finances, their purpose, whatever it is. It's like finding out the why. And I think oftentimes people never look at the fact that, okay, why am I afraid? Why am I hesitant? Mm-hmm. Why do I continuously choose the same man, the same woman, and then complain about the type of people I'm getting? Why am I making decisions that are not pushing me closer to my destiny, but bringing me further back and sinking me down? And literally it becomes an anchor. And so I think finding that why is so vitally important to whether or not you advance or whether or not you stay the same, whether you excel or you just stay mediocre. Your why is vitally important. And I hope people get that from all the lessons that you're teaching them, because that's one of the biggest things, I think, in overcoming self-doubt. Because when you look self, what is self-doubt? That's us looking at ourselves and not believing in us, not believing we can do the things that we either have the capabilities of doing, the talent to do, or the know-how to do. And today people call that imposter syndrome. And it's one of those things where I always look at, and I think everybody, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, everybody at some point in their life have dealt with self-doubt. Everybody, including myself, has dealt with self-doubt. But at the end of the day, I think one of the things I love about what you teach people is, how do you move from where you are in doubting yourself to designing a life you don't need a vacation from? Because think about this. How many people every Monday, they dread going to work? And I always tell people, it's because you're not living on purpose. You're just working. You're just doing a task. You're just doing what they call a job. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, if you're living on purpose, every day is Friday to you. That's how I think about it.
Nah, I love that, man. I love that. Every day is Friday, because you mentioned a key word, which is purpose. And we are purpose-driven beings, right? That's human nature. And I also want to point it out that self-doubt isn't inherently bad, right? If you think about it, in bad and good, that's a concept, it's a construct. So there's typically both of those are typically whatever situation, no matter how dire it looks. But when you think about purpose, a lot of us are walking around, we forgot what it was, or we never knew, right? We've been so goal-oriented, oriented on goals that don't align with us, that we have no joy anymore. We are a ship sailing without a destination, so we're lost. Yep. And that's because we don't really take that time to do that introspection. We don't take time to do that work. Like, it is not always easy. Some of us, we have many passions. We have many things we enjoy doing. We have whatever. But at some point along the way, people tend to lose themselves, right?
Yep.
They tend to lose themselves because of the pressures of society, because of the pressures of maybe their people pleasers, whatever it is. Someone told them that they couldn't in the past, and now they haven't gotten over. But that's why it's so important to have people around you, whether it's professionals, friends, family, people around you who challenge you, who allow you to be empowered, feel empowered, allow you to grow. We are not meant to do things alone. That's just not how we were designed. We are designed to have social constructs. I always say like 360 support, because in the military, we talk about 360 security, right? We talk about having a cordon off on whatever the asset is to protect it, to make sure no harm can come its way. And that's the same thing I challenge my clients to do in life, is to do that 360 security, but it starts within, right?
Yep.
When you understand that opinions can really only bother you if you let it. No one can get you out of character. No one can make you do something unless it's a life-threatening situation. So we have to start taking that accountability. And that way, when we hold ourselves accountable, now we can start looking at other people who challenge us to be better, empower us, and are doing things to inspire us and all the other things. And now you form that 360 security, and now you are doing very well in life. And that's what it took me. It took me to find those people that challenged me and weren't pulling me to say, you can sell this pack and get some quick money or whatever it was. And that's just being serious, man. That's what it is. When we allow ourselves to get sucked in, and it's, you mentioned the point you were talking about excuses and all that stuff, like people staying and into what's familiar. And that's where it takes a lot to get out of that, because it's a mindset change, right? Yep. So many of us are rooted in like scarcity and lack. And we just have this competitive mindset. And we're in that competitive mindset may not lead to us being competitors for what we're trying to achieve. It may lead to us being defensive, because now we're thinking everyone's coming for us. Everyone has it out for us. And we don't want to get close to this person. We don't want to tell them our ideas. It's the exact opposite for me now. Now, instead of competing, I want to collaborate, because I understand that when I share my ideas, I can find someone who may have skills or a perspective that I wouldn't have had. And now it makes me better and makes us better as a unit. And that's where a lot of us get stuck, that fear of someone hurting us. Well, that's vulnerability comes in there, right? Vulnerability allows for serendipity. If you open yourself up to allow to learn, to love, and to live, now beautiful things can happen for you. But when you close yourself off, all you do is cause yourself to be in this bubble. And when you're in this bubble, you can't really see what's going on. You're looking through a lens of fear and negativity. In that bubble. So that's what happens. And now you can't grow. You can't grow. You're comfortable, but it's artificial, right? There is really, you're comfortable because you know what it is, right? That's like when people are in bad relationships, they just know the devil they're with. And that's what happens. And that happens in life. And then next thing you know, 50 years has passed you and you've done the same job. You've made the same money. You've lived check to check your whole life, whatever it is. And that's how it takes place.
Yeah. Now, Javon, you don't use the college word, and the people studying to get their GED is like, what does serendipity mean? You know?
Yeah, no problem. So I touched on it. It's just being able to allow beautiful things to happen in life. It's like things that wouldn't happen otherwise if you didn't open yourself up to the world, if you didn't allow things to happen, if you try to control every single little thing, even though you can't, right? Then you don't experience that beauty.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, you can only change that in which you control. If it is out of your control, you cannot change it. So why worry about it? Why exhaust time in it? Because you can't change it. You got to focus on changing the very things that you personally have control over. And most time that's you, that's your mindset. And so I wanted to ask you this, how does one overcome self-doubt? What are three things that you would tell a person that's dealing with and battling with self-doubt right now? And they say, hey, I wanted to design the life that I don't need a vacation from. So what's the one thing I have to do first? Because people always want these steps, because oftentimes we're stuck in quicksand and all of our ideas and thought processes have not worked for us. And that's why we're so frustrated. So when someone comes along with some fresh water and they give you a drink and you say, hey, drink from this and you will not thirst again. So what are three things that people can utilize right now in their lives to help them overcome the self-doubt that they battle with every day?
Good question. So I'm going to start with what you can do individually, right? So the first thing you can do is forgive yourself for all the times you look back and said, I woulda, coulda, shoulda, because you can no longer do anything for that. The past is only to inform, but it's not to dictate and rule you. You don't live there. You got to come back to the present. So you got to forgive yourself. Start with a clean slate. The second is believe in you. Believe that what you dreamed or what you thought of is possible. Because if you believe it, you'll do the work necessary to make it. And then the third thing is really challenge yourself. If you stay in that little comfort zone of what you do, you're never going to step forward, right? Your steps are going to be like this versus leaps, right? So you got to really challenge yourself. It doesn't have to be like this big, gigantic challenge. It could be starting off small, but you have to build that success muscle. So if I challenge myself, say I wanted a new job, I'm tired of working wherever I'm working. Maybe I'll go on LinkedIn and I see a recruiter for a company I wanted to work with. That challenge could be hitting that recruiter up, right? Just finding, putting in that work, whatever it is. But start small and just keep building on it. Each day, challenge yourself to do something different, something that you feel those little butterflies will move you forward closer to who you want to be. Right. That's another thing. I'm going to give a bonus. Don't focus on who you are. Focus on who you want to be. Act as that person. Think as that person. Ask yourself, what would they do? And that's going to help you move forward. Because when you imagine things and you visualize the success, you can reverse engineer everything. You can work backwards for that. What did I see when I was that person? How were they living? Who was around them? All these different things.
Okay. I'm going to ask you another question, but first I'm going to bring in my friends. JB and Nate are here with us right now.
What's going on, Kings?
You guys.
What's up, fella?
What's up?
Javon, I got another question for you. When someone is sitting idle and they're thinking, when you said believe in yourself, and they had so many times where they have believed in themselves and things did work out. And so we all know it has chiseled at their confidence. So they're no longer confident and believing in themselves. What tip would you give them how to get off that fence and get back in the game and really get over where they are and that life hurdle so that they can move forward?
Yeah. One of the things I said earlier, realize you don't have to do it by yourself, right? Mm. If you struggle, if you have issues, if you always cop out or whatever it is, find someone who aligns. They are doing some things. Maybe you like to see them. They're inspiring you, whatever it is. Find them and find a bunch of them. Like, don't, not just one. Find a couple of them. And I talked about that 360 support system. You got to have people around you. There's always times, including me as a mindset coach, that I'm like, damn, how do I get this done? But don't focus so much on the how. Just focus on the what do I want? And then just start taking those steps. You don't have to know everything that's going on, especially when you have some people with you that's going to help you when your belief is waning in yourself. And that would be the one most important point I would say.
Okay.
Now I can get more if y'all want them, but I want people to start with that.
Nate, JB, y'all got questions?
Yeah, man, I'm really enjoying the conversation, man. I had two questions for you. Earlier, you were talking about value and how important it is to discover that self-value. What kind of advice would you give to someone who's struggling to find that value within themselves?
That's a great question, JB. One, change how you're speaking to yourself. So we hear it all the time, like positive language and positive action. So if I'm speaking to myself positively, no matter what, you can reframe almost anything you're saying to yourself. So if I say I suck, I'm going to start believing that. But if I say I'm not as efficient as I want to be, how can I get better? Then I can take the action, right? And I can still work off of that. So you have to really speak to yourself in a positive manner. Another thing I would say, again, the support, right? Make sure you have people who are not downing you, belittling you, making you feel less than, because that shouldn't even be a thing, to be honest. Like, if someone has constructive criticism, they should say it in a way that's not, they should say it with tact, pretty much. They should say it in a way that's not taking you down and deconstructing you from where you are. And then the third thing is practice gratitude. You really have to practice gratitude, not just for God, but to yourself. So every day I wake up, before I even open my eyes, I just thank God and I thank myself for getting me as far as I can get, right, so far. And you have to do that. Look in the mirror. Tell yourself you love yourself. Tell yourself, yo, I appreciate how far we've come. I know we still have some work to do, whatever it is. Be honest, but show that love, because when you forget to celebrate you, you forget all the things that you've gone through. Now it just seems like a struggle. Now it's like you don't appreciate what you've done so far. And it's really hard to continue to build off a shaky foundation.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff.
And I'll say this too, Javon, I don't believe in constructive criticism. Number one, reason why. Reason being is because.
Let me hear this one.
Why are you looking like that, JB?
Because I know you. Yep.
I'm waiting on this one myself.
See, oftentimes when people are giving you what they coin as constructive criticism, it's really criticism constructed to belittle you and to... Because people have this idea of what the criticism looks like. I believe in constructive feedback, because the feedback is helping you. The feedback keeps you empowered. The criticism is the thing that dejects you as a person, because it's going to be mostly filled, because of what we've been taught about the definition of criticism. It's going to be filled with mostly negative words, which impacts the mindset of people, right? So if you give constructive feedback, that feedback is laced with wisdom. It also houses empowerment, and it allows you to leave the conversation feeling, oh man, I can be better. Just like you just talk about what you tell yourself. I can now be better because I receive some constructive feedback from someone who actually loves me and want to see me win. Constructive criticism normally comes from people who don't want to see you win. So that's why I don't believe in it.
Okay.
Well said.
I like that. So well said. Yeah. I like that. I like how you said that. I can agree with that.
Yeah. But when you think about our world and how we function, we talked about this last week, guys. A lot of what we do and how we operate is centered around what we've been taught. So how we define terms, words, actions is all centered around what somebody else told us it should mean. When we start taking back, now, Javon, you talked about God. Now, I don't know which God you're referring to, because you didn't specify. And I know in this world we live in, there's a host of gods that people serve. But when we talk about the God of the universe, per se, when we look at how he operates and how he constructs things, it's not the same way in which we've been taught. So that's why when I look at words like criticism, and I look at how society uses, that's normally, even with that word they call rebuke, that's another form of criticism, but it's deemed to hurt you. And if criticism or rebuke doesn't restore you, then it's just abuse. So that's why I look at words and terms and actions from a different viewpoint, because I've grown over the years. I've gotten a lot wiser. And I realize, even in myself, which is how, and like you, Javon, how I was able to change is I got to redefine how I have seen the life I have and how I'm living the life I have if I want a different life. I just got to redefine it, because if I'm going by the definitions I've been taught my whole life, I have been taught erroneously.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you mentioned, Finch. And that's really why I'm not afraid to use that word criticism, because in vulnerability, right? If you think about these two words, they have negative connotations. Huh. And a word, as we know, we can shape it to be what we want it to be if you look at just about any word. So vulnerability also had that negative connotation. But when I speak about vulnerability, I'm not talking about naivety. I'm not talking about being blind to what you're seeing. I'm talking about opening yourself up. And also with criticism, I love your definition. I love how you changed it to feedback. because that's actually what I was saying when I was referring to it. So I appreciate you, you know, really doing that molding and using the word feedback. So I like how you did that, man. That was good. Because to be honest, a lot of these words people are afraid to say, right? And right. That's why I like to use certain words, because we have given them these negative things and people hear them and they're like, ooh, now they become taboo. So I really work towards taking words that people do not like, that maybe give some people like, oh man, he said that word. I want to take those and make them positive, because I think that all of us, we need to get over that, especially in a Black community. Like, there's certain words that hit us and we're like, nah, I ain't listening to this man no more. And that's what I want to do. I want to change that, where we don't have that. We can talk about anything and we can use any words and people can go ahead and give their voice freely, as we're doing on this platform.
Cool. Nate, you got a question?
Dude, first of all, I want to say thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate the support.
Army, right?
Yes, sir. Did NCO? You serve? Oh, yeah, you served. Yep, NCO. Yes, sir. I did not want to go to that officer side. Too many politics.
I went to the dark side.
Oh.
It is what it is. But what's your MOS?
25 Bravo, Information Technology Specialist. How about really? You?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm rebranching to 26 Alpha.
26 Alpha. Tell me, remind me what that is.
That's a systems engineer. It's actually a new discipline that the Cigna Corps created. Because you know, awesome. We're getting into all of this cyber warfare now.
Yeah,
and I started out logistics, but yeah. So now I'm switching up. So maybe I'll see you downrange somewhere. But here's my question for you. When you talk about that aha moment with your mom and your sister seeing you and breaking down, and that's when you realize, if I get another chance, I'll make a change. And it's easy to tell people, change your mindset or think positively or reframe your reality in order to make a change. But truth is, everybody's walk is different. And you say that you are a coach. So what I would like to know is, out of the other people who you have coached or mentored, what were some of their success stories like in terms of that triggering moment where the light bulb went off and they're like, okay, I'm ready to make that change?
Yeah, for sure. And thank you for asking that question. And that is so true. And that's why I like to come to coaching sessions with a blank slate. Like, I don't want a preconceived notion. I don't want to think I have the solution for them or anything. I like to listen to them first. But some of the most effective changes that I've seen from my clients, one was a fellow service member. He was really going through it with his job. Like, he didn't have a grasp of career. His marriage was on the rocks. His kids, he was in the midst of losing his children. And it was all due to the stress, the trauma that he had experienced, not just in the military, but prior to the military, being abused as a child, all these other things. And we worked together and being able to see that transformation where he was able to believe in himself enough and realize that he actually had the skills. We do like strength assessments and all types of stuff. So he was able to see that he actually had what it took to get some of the positions that he was looking at that he thought were like not in his reach. And then he was able to communicate effectively and learn emotional intelligence over our time so he could rebuild his marriage, learn how to not lash out, learn how to think before he spoke, learn how to do things that was romantic, to build his relationship, all these different things. And that was one of the biggest transformations I've seen. Then I've had clients where maybe, like, for instance, I had one gentleman who was retiring, right, from the education space. And he had lost his mother shortly before his retirement. And his sister, who he used to be close with, they just completely, over the course of their mother dying, they just lost their connection. And we had to go through a few exercises to realize what was really important to him. Like, his mother was his life. Like, he was retiring actually to travel the world with his mom and do all these different things with her. So when he lost her, he lost his purpose. So we had to go ahead and find out what really mattered to him. What was the symbol of his mother? What did that symbolize, being able to travel and do all these things with her? Why did him and his sister break down? All these different things, so we can build an action plan to help him rebuild that relationship, rebuild his purpose and find his purpose, and then identify how he was actually going to do it. And I can give more case studies, but I think the important part of it is, yes, it's tough to change your mindset. Yes, it's tough to change, to get emotional intelligence. Yes, it's tough to face the traumas and all that other stuff that comes along with it. But when you have someone, and we have a couple of people, a support system, one of the first things we do is identify a couple of people who can work as they're growing. And the first thing you have to do is get to the point where you can believe that. Because if you don't believe that these things are possible, you're going to do the work and you'll be like, ah, man, I'm done. That was nothing. That ain't even work. What is that? So that's one of the first criteria. Like, in the contracts of people who sign up for me and all these things, the first thing I say is come in with the belief that things are possible. Because if you do, nothing will work for you. I don't care what's going on. Nothing will work for you, and you will never be able to see the success that you're obtaining in your journey.
I got one last question for you before we let you out of here. And you're right, that was powerful. You just mentioned about mindset being hard to change. Why do you think that is for a lot of people? Why is it so hard for us to change how we think?
Yeah, it's a few reasons. One of the things is, a lot of these things come from when we're impressionable, which is as young children and things like that. And when they become unaddressed, they build. And they manifest in different ways, because you think that it's all good. You think you're grown now and you're past it. But that stuff stays with you if you never address it. And as many of us never do, we never seek therapy. We never seek coaching. We never seek counseling. We never seek any of those things until it becomes reactive instead of proactive. If we could get it where we shift these things left and make it so they're proactive, where we're building, we're doing the work prior to, where we feel like we can't handle it anymore, it will make things so much better for us, so much easier. It will make the path much clearer for us. Another reason mindset is hard to change is because things are ingrained in us. We are getting information from everywhere. And a lot of it is negative, quite frankly. If you look on social media, if you're not adjusting your feed to be feeding you instead of detracting from you, you're getting all that energy, even if you don't think so. You're watching these people get killed. You're watching these people getting beat up. You're watching all these things, and it impacts you. Energy is transferable. No matter if you think it's hurting you or not, it affects you. So that's important. It's important to change how you're ingesting this information and how you're processing it. Because if you're not careful, those things are starting to load up in your mind, in your mind's eye. Another thing is, people really don't take the time to learn how to be mindful, which is aware of your thoughts, aware of how you're doing things, aware of what you're saying to yourself, just aware, right? Instead of living in the moment, people are so focused on the past or the present, and that's really impacting you. I myself, I've struggled with depression over the years, and Lao Tzu said it best. If you focus on the past, that's where you experience depression. If you focus on the future, that's where you experience anxiety. If you focus on the present, that's where you can find happiness. And that's what I've started really focusing on, is the present. Like you said earlier, what you can change, right? What you can change, because mindset it comes into play on everything. But if you never pay attention to what you're saying and how you're setting yourself up, you can't change that mindset.
Man, that's good. I'm going to ask you one last question. And I'm truly going to ask you one last question.
It's all good, man. I'm enjoying the combo, man. You can't just do
a great conversation, man.
I actually got one too, Spence. So
okay, you ask yours first, and then I ask mine next.
Okay. Yeah. My question was, and you touched on it earlier, and I know for me, it rung true for me as well. And I just wanted to just get your perspective real quick, Juwan. Why do you think it's so difficult as Black men that we have such trouble asking other men for help? Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. That's a great question. We have a violent history against us, one, right? And trauma is not just on you, it's generational. So you carry that in your X and Y chromosomes, right? Whatever your ancestors have been through is carried with you in some way. And then if you think about how we've been separated from our families and denigrated over the years, that plays into effect. So when people say the angry black man, yeah, we have reason to be angry and upset and defensive.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so it takes us more time to realize how to express those emotions because we've always been told to suppress instead of express. So we're taught, hey, if you cry, you're weak. If you say show anything other than like anger and strength, you're weak. So we have to get these things. Or when in slavery times and all those other times, we were told you can't show anything except what that person wants you to show, which W.E.B. Du Bois called the souls of black folks, right? When he talked about the different souls and the different faces we had to show. But that is why it's so tough for black men. And that is why it's so important for us to have conversations like this, where we're expressing our opinions, we're expressing things we've gone through, we're expressing our different ideas and ideologies about how we get over all these things. We just have to keep having those conversations over and over again. And I don't like to use the term safe space, but we have to have spaces where we can express, right? Where we feel we're not going to be denigrated again, especially by our own people.
I got to ask you now. I got two questions.
let me get mine in before you turn into Dr. V.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Javon, in listening to you, I've heard a lot of good material, a lot of good content. And for our listening audience who might also be curious, can you actually share the trainings and credentials and basically your, I don't know if qualifications is a good word to say, but basically your credentials as a therapist so that people can understand exactly what they're getting when they come to you for help?
First and foremost, I'm not a therapist, right? I am a coach. And the difference is therapists, one, they're regulated field. They have to go to school for all these things and everything. And therapists tend to focus from the past to the present. I am a coach, which I focus on the present to the future, getting you from where you are to where you want to be. The certifications I've received, I went through a program called International Coaching Academy. Everything I've done is aligned with an organization called International Coaching Federation. If you go to a coach and they haven't been accredited because it's not a regulated field, then they probably haven't gone through that training. Everything is usually geared towards International Coaching Federation. So I've gotten my Empowered Lifestyle Coaching Certification. I've gotten my Rational Emotive Behavioral Therapy Coaching Certification. I've gotten my Mindset Coaching Certification. I've gotten all these certifications. But the point is, I'm doing the work so I can show my clients and others who aren't my clients. I just want to be able to speak to everyone. I want to be able to help all of us get success. But the point is that I'm always continuing my education so that I'm not just talking out of nowhere. I know exactly what I'm saying through my experiences, but I also know exactly what I'm saying through informed education.
Now, you know what, Nate? Now, I'm not saying this to you personally, Nate, but I'm going to say this because this goes back to what I said earlier. That's another thing I think as a society, we have to rid our minds. I think that's a mindset change too, is we feel like if somebody hasn't said somebody is certified to do XYZ, that they're not qualified to do it. And in essence, I think, and again, because this is my show, I can say this word. I think it's bullshit for one, because if somebody gives you stuff that helps you become a better person, no matter if they went to a school, and again, see, I'm one of those people because I've traveled around the country. I don't have no certifications in nothing, but I've spoken to thousands of people from Peru to Israel, and everything I tell people, it works for them. And I say this now because I remember there was a time where I was approached by somebody about a degree. I flunked out of college. At the end of the day, I'm going to tell you where I learned this from. My good friend, Hill Harper. Y'all know what he taught me? We was on tour together in 2008. It was called the HBCU Empower Me Tour, brought on by UNCF and the Wachovia Foundation at the time. It's now called the Wells Fargo Foundation. But he said to me, he said, people go to school to learn how to work for other people. And at the end of the day, you don't need school. But in our society, if you don't have some letters behind your name or some plaque on the wall, we discount your advice or your expertise because of what we was talking about earlier, the mindset that has been betrothed upon us by society. And in essence, that very person can have a host of things that you can use to change your entire life, your bank account, your career, But because of how we view things in our society, it's all surrounded around somebody saying you're good enough to do it. Or, you know what? We validate you. And so I don't subscribe to that, because at the end of the day, I've made a lot of money without a degree and without certifications in a host of things that people. Now, I'm not a coach. Let me correct that. I'm not considered a life coach, but I have coached, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm not padding these stats. I have coached thousands of people from big name celebrities down to everyday average Joe, and all of the things I've ever given them has worked for them in their lives.
The best thing you can learn from is life, right? That's the best teacher. Life is the best teacher. Well, I say OJT, right? On the job training.
On the job training. There you go.
And that's how it is. But for me, like the certifications in schooling, all the schooling I've done was really a personal thing for me, because I know what our ancestors had gone through for us to be able to do these things. I just wanted to learn. And I'm a very curious individual. And what all these certifications and MBAs and all this stuff, it gave me the structured approach where I'm not going, because I will go down a rabbit hole. I'm just that curious. I'll go on YouTube and I'll be watching videos for hours, like, damn, how much time did I spend on? But that's really what it is, man. It's just about being curious and me being appreciative, because at one point when I was about to lose my freedom, I really was like, damn, I just threw away everything. So now that I know that I have all these things at my fingertips, I want it all, right? I want to embrace it, and then I want to share it when I do get it.
So one last question for you, Javon. What would you say you're currently on the fence about in your life, and how you plan to get off of?
What am I currently on the fence about in my life? Man, a lot. I think being on the fence is just a part of the healing journey, man. I still go to therapy regularly, and one of the things I'm on the fence about is my past. Am I truly healed through all the work I've done at this point, or does it still come back and manifest in different ways? And that's one of the things I'm on the fence about. And I always say healing is a journey that never ends. It's an ongoing thing. It's a distal goal that we look at. We're always going to be searching for. So that's what I'm on the fence about.
All right, man. So if people want to connect with you offline outside of this podcast, how can they do so?
Yeah, you can connect with me all platforms, social media at Live Not Loathe. That's LiveNotLoathe. And you can also go to the website, www.livenotloathe.com. Easy to find.
All right, man. Hey, thank you for stopping by the fence and helping our audience get their ass off of that fence. Man, we appreciate you. Truly, we really do. And you can come back here anytime.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to give us a follow, rate us, and leave a comment, because we'd love to hear your thoughts. And until next time, get your ass off the fence.